If you've ever hidden anything significant about your personal life at work, then you know how exhausting it can be to lie. We aren't performing at our best. Perhaps you're going through a divorce, received a cancer diagnosis, started IVF, or you haven't come out to your colleagues yet. But creating a culture of openness and acceptance is not only beneficial for the welfare of your staff, certainly, but also for your bottom line and for designing policies suited to attracting and retaining the best talent. I'm Georgie Frost, and this is the So What from BCG.
It's because it's the extra mental labor to navigate that identity that it's important that people feel comfortable. Now, they don't need to share anything about their lives, but they shouldn't spend time thinking about what they're not sharing as they talk about it.
Today, I'm talking to Dakota Santana Grace, BCG principal and expert in e-commerce package delivery and lead of the Pride Connects team.
Every year, right, my Instagram fills up with people talking about how stressed or agitated they are by all the companies with their rainbow flags and their policies that don't actually support queer people, or their funding of lobbyists that are politicians that are actively homophobic. And obviously, if you're going to make moves, like if you're going to put a rainbow flag out, you must also be aligning yourself to the policies and the practices within your company and your culture. And it matters. And so I think the rainbow's valuable. I'm glad people do it. I wouldn't tell anyone not to do it, but they should be asking themselves, is it matching what they're actually doing for their employees and what they're actually doing when they are influencing their external world? Are they also supporting those employees from a broader social context?
What they're doing for their employees, you talked about policies. Just explain what some of those might be.
Yeah, so I'll break it up, right? You've got your culture policies, which is how are you bringing queer people together, build allyship, make people feel included. I think back to my first time hosting a large Pride festival in our Boston office, and I brought a drag queen to the office. Everyone was completely startled at the thought of a drag queen walking into a consultant office. I was not the first to do it. New York had done it the year prior, and it still sits with people. It sits with people who were allies, how exciting it was. It sits with people who were members of the Pride or LGBTQ community, how cool it was that the office wanted to experience part of their culture that's a little bit more niche. But the only reason that that was worth anything is because there were policies that back it up. And so every company needs to be asking, what's your benefits program? How does it support queer and LGBTQ people? I've got friends who are adopting right now. Do you have adoption benefits? I've got friends who are trying to go through surrogacy or fertility treatments. What are your benefits there? That's important. It's implicitly almost necessary when you're working with LGBTQ families. What's your trans health benefits? And, you know, very personally for me, do you cover Truvada, which is an incredibly life-saving medication that actually prevents the transmission of HIV/AIDS? So it actually essentially creates high level of resistance for people who want to take it proactively to avoid getting HIV/AIDS.
I don't know if you have the stats to hand, but do you have any idea of what percentage of companies in North America where you cover have policies like that in place?
I don't, but I'm comfortable saying too few.
Right. That's fair enough. That's fair enough. What would it take to get those policies in place? How do you build them? Where do you start?
Listen, I think it always starts with listening to the employees and what they actually need and what they're looking for. In most companies, assuming there's not a breakage in values where they actually don't want to support their LGBTQ employees, at which point I can't help them. But for those that do want to, and I hope that's a majority, you know, it comes down to actually listening to what the employees are looking for. I still remember when we were advocating inside of BCG for shifts in our paternity and maternity benefits and shifts in our adoption benefits and surrogacy benefits. And those have evolved over the past 2 to 3 years. And they've meant a lot to our employees. And that's how it came forward, though, was actually just listening to people and where they are and what they're prioritizing.
Obviously, it's wonderful to have those sorts of policies in place for your workers to make people feel included. But there is also a great business case for this as well.
Yeah. I think if we decide that we want to have the strongest employee base and we decide that you want the most diverse and capable employee population that you can build, and there's tons of research around the value of diversity in the workplace that we don't need to get into, almost every executive will have read it. How does this translate then to the importance of retention and attraction of LGBTQ talent, I think is the real question. And the reality is that queer people are 13 times more likely to quit a job if the culture isn't right.
culture isn't right. Explain to me, what do you mean when you say the culture isn't right? For example.
Not just policies, that's right. Places where there's open discrimination.
Obviously.
Places where there's not consequences for implicit discrimination, and places where they don't feel comfortable being out is one of the core drivers. And that's also a core driver in how we attract talent. The reality is we're 7 times more likely to not go somewhere because of a culture, a perception of the culture. And I live this very personally when I do recruiting with our undergrads and MBAs. And I get asked questions about, do you feel comfortable being out? Do you feel comfortable being out with clients? Do you feel that there are queer mentors available? Now, for me, I've been very lucky, right? I sit back and I think, well, these questions are so obvious. I feel very supported. I walk around in 4-inch red stilettos on a Friday occasionally, and no one bats an eye, which I find actually offensive at this point. I'd like someone to bat at least half an eye. And I have mentorship across the country and world of queer leaders that I really respect. So for me, it's always been there. But when I think about the conversations I have with dozens and dozens of queer recruits every single year, this comes up. And it's a reason that they don't look at other places. And it's a reason that they're prioritizing coming to us. And it's something that I'm really proud of. It's something that I would encourage any company to be stepping up to focus on, because it's the only way you're going to pull in as diverse of an employee workforce as possible. And if they aren't out, it's going to be, if people are not out, they spend time covering, they spend time hiding who they are. And when they're doing that, that's time that is not going towards creativity or building community or building whatever your offering is for your customers, because they're distracted for fear of their own identities being exposed.
Dakota, we live in the real world, you and I, most of the time. I am offended by the 4-inch heels purely because my back could never handle 4-inch heels, and I'm jealous. But no, we live in the real world, and we live in a world where people are quite easily offended by certain things. And there will be people who don't appreciate seeing you going around the office. I don't know if you go around the office in 4-inch heels, but if you do, or a drag queen in it, well, there you go. Take care. Or a drag queen in the office, that might offend people as well. So are we swinging too far in one direction to appease one section of society or one section of the workforce while risking offending the others? Or do you say, well, boo-hoo to you?
Well, I would love to talk to the person who was emotionally wounded by my heels, and we can have a conversation for how it harmed their self-perception and identity. But on the front of the drag queen being in the office, it's well announced. It's optional attendance. You don't need to go. And you know, I think the reality is, unlike 40 years ago when it was a boys' club in a cigar room where I would not be invited, we did invite everyone. And you can opt in or opt out of that journey of your own volition.
I have spoken about this on BCG Podcast Past, that bleeding of private and work life. And I think the last couple of years where everyone's been on Zoom and you can see in the background pictures of my family, it's become much, much more intertwined. Too much so? There might be some people that argue, why do you need to say what you do in your private life in your workplace? Just get on with the job.
It's a fair question. And I think the question comes from a place of, I always say that a lot of our questions on these topics come from blind spots, not necessarily from malice. Same with where companies have policy gaps, right? I think it's a blind spot, not an intentional choice. But the reason that it matters is because there's so many times that the person who asks me that question about why does it matter that I can talk about my personal life also mentioned their opposite gender partner, talked about their kids, their family commitments, all describing their weekend within the past few days. The reality is humans are social creatures, and we sit around talking about what we're up to. Now, some people choose to fully compartmentalize. Very few people fully compartmentalize their lives for the amount of time many of us spend in the workplace. Some of us, I'm on the extreme end, choose to barely compartmentalize our lives. But the reality is majority of people share something. And the minute you have to start filtering, we call it covering pieces of yourself as you're working through it, describing your weekend. Say it's the week after Pride. Do you mention that you went to the Pride Festival? If you're covering, no, now you have to come up with your Saturday story. But then you just bumped into your straight colleague who didn't know you were out while you were on the street because they went to witness the coolness of Pride. And now half of the people in the office have heard about how they saw you on the street. And now you're covering again. And so it's because it's the extra mental labor to navigate that identity that it's important that people feel comfortable. Now, they don't need to share anything about their lives, but they shouldn't spend time thinking about what they're not sharing as they talk about it.
Well, for different reasons, I'm sure that many people will know what it feels like to hide things at work and that weight of having a secret, whether that's you're going through a divorce or IVF or cancer treatment. As I said, not the same thing, but you can understand that trying to hide what's going on and impacts obviously on you mentally and possibly physically, but also the quality of your work. To put it bluntly, you're not going to be performing at your best when you have things on your mind that you can't get out.
Yeah, from a pure corporate value perspective, right? It is materially worse if you have some of your queer employees spending the day worrying about what they say about their weekends. I mean, we all understand basic professional norms. I'm not saying that you need to hear every detail of every single Saturday evening I've had. I'd prefer that you didn't. But I am saying that I shouldn't have to think about whether or not I give the top line narrative that I went out to a restaurant and then swung by the Pride Festival, or that I swung by a gay bar for 2 seconds, or if I happen to name the bar that I went to and it is gay, that I'm not somehow jarring the world by saying that, and that I didn't have to spend time making up a restaurant name. Because it's actually a very natural question when someone says, oh, where'd you go out this weekend? You might actually answer that question. No, I'm in DC, so the answer is probably number 9, but that's a gay bar. Now, if I'm trying to cover, now I have to spend 20 seconds quickly choking on my words as I figure out where I went out. That is exhausting to do. And I've done it, right? I went to a client and I've always been out with my clients. And for whatever reason, this client I thought was conservative. And I work largely in industrial goods and package delivery. I work with a fairly conservative base of clients as it is. And I've always been out. But for whatever reason, and I've never had an issue and I've been very lucky there. But for whatever reason, in this instance, I felt the need to hide it. And I was stressed. I was more stressed than I had ever been with a client. I was stressed in meetings. I was stressed coming in on Mondays. I wasn't having a good time. And that was rare. I actually like my job. I was just sitting there wondering 3 weeks in, and I was lucky. One of my best friends was on the team. And she looks at me and is like, well, it's because you're not out right now. And it was dumb stuff. You know, when you're doing client work and you're on the road, you spend time with people. You spend time at dinners. You have casual moments. And in those casual moments, life comes up. And mine wasn't. I wasn't mentioning my boyfriend at the time. I wasn't mentioning weekend trips or things like that, because I wasn't identifying myself. And that pulled out a huge part of my identity. And it actually made me, I would say, worse. I'll openly say, I think it was worse at the job for the first 3 weeks. And then finally, I just said the word boyfriend in a passing conversation. And it was like weight came off of me. And I'm coming from a fairly privileged position here, right? I am a largely white passing Latino gay man, which means that I get many of the benefits. I don't pass as straight, to be very clear, but I get many of the benefits accrued to men in society, and I'm neither trans nor a woman, right? I am on of the spectrum of discrimination that I face day to day. I probably face some of the lesser within our queer community, and my trade-offs are different when I do that math. But for me, I really was materially more stressed, more tired, because constantly in conversation, I was adjusting the words coming out of my mouth, and I did not enjoy doing it. It's tiring.
And how was it received by the client?
There was a soft smile on this man's face as if he was happy that I had finally come out. And again, like I again have sort of the joy and curse that I really don't pass, right? People have screamed explicit phrases at me on the street, just walking home from friends' weddings. And I live largely in the New England area, so this is not the most homophobic part of the states. And I still get heckled and catcalled and insulted on the street regularly over the past 2-3 years, probably 5-6 times. And I got chased by a man maybe 4 weeks ago screaming, you're giving us all HIV/AIDS. So discrimination is real, and it happens. But for me, in my corporate setting, I don't live it, and I don't pass as straight. So I have given up ever trying to hide my identity. There's one other story, if you'll let me tell it, that I think will be helpful. I was in a client meeting, and I always say this is one of the best moments of allyship. Allyship is about meeting people where they are, and that's all it is at its very simplest. And when I left a client meeting, it was probably my second year at the firm, and one of my closest mentors now. We were sitting at an airport, our flights had been delayed, and he says, hey, like, we haven't done feedback in a while. Can we quickly chat? So we're chatting, and he said, hey, I just want to mention, like, you deepen your voice in meetings. Why do you do that? And I said, oh, well, I'm trying to hide my gay voice. And in this moment, he had choices. He could have said, you don't need to do that. I would have been really annoyed because he doesn't know what it's like to try hiding your queerness. Instead, he said the most honest thing he could have. It's not working and you're less effective.
How did you respond?
I was so happy. He took a risk in that moment to say those words. And he took a risk that he knew that I would perceive them honestly. And it was super important because I never again spent time trying to sound super straight because it just wasn't worth my time. And it was making me worse at leading my meetings. But it's simple things like that where I have tons of energy that was getting totally gulped down by trying to deepen my voice because I thought that's how I needed to sound when presenting.
I'm glad you mentioned that story because I do think it's really relevant, because earlier you were talking about blind spots, unintentional discriminations. And I think there's, it's twofold. It's one is the blind spots, obviously, that we can't see, we don't know are there, we can't do policies for people that we can't understand what they're going through, etc. But also it's the, am I allowed to say this to him? Will he think I'm being discriminatory if I say this?
It's so, I don't even want to write it off as easy, right? It's so hard. The greatest moments of allyship have always been for me, and I think for many people who will listen to this, are deeply in the gray zone and represent someone taking a risk. And that's why I say, at the end of the day, it is meeting people where they are and knowing the relationship and the intent behind what you're saying. And that is why mentorship, openness, and the reality is I also personally was sending out signals that gave openness to do that. And he read those signals accordingly and it was helpful. It's a hard line. It requires judgment. It requires, I always joke, the best allyship is very close to an HR violation because you're talking about really personal topics about someone's identity and helping them navigate it in a professional setting. And that's hard. And that's why leaning on allyship is just as important as leaning on fellow queer mentors who implicitly have a bit more license to go there with you. The problem is, just by statistics and the realities of our corporate world, a majority of senior people are not queer by a huge margin. And so we do need to figure out how we navigate that gray zone. And it starts with intent and it starts with an understanding. And you don't have to go right straight to, you still have gay voice, right? You can go softer into it, like saying you deepen your voice. And he didn't need to say it's not working. He could have said, well, let's talk about how you could be more comfortable because you're more effective when you're emoting as your full self. He had other ways to go. The reality is we had a relationship where he felt super comfortable shooting the straight shot on that. There are circular ways to arrive at that same outcome. Just would have required a 10-minute conversation instead of a 3-minute conversation and a chuckle.
How do you know, though, if you're getting it right or wrong as a business leader with all the things you've spoken about, policy, language, culture?
Well, I always say in any of these topics, right, anything that has to do with diversity, the first assumption I always have is we're probably not doing it right. In some place, somewhere, somehow, we're probably not doing it right. But the way that you know that you're doing the right thing, I guess I would say, is one, is this on your agenda? Is this something that you're thinking about from a leadership C-level and -1 level perspective? Because that matters. If those people are thinking about it, that cascades. Are you present as a leader with the communities? I actually find it, I'm planning a Pride conference right now. It'll be our first one back in person. And leaders are scrambling to be invited to this conference. And I have to now navigate that, which puts me in a fun position. But it is because our leadership understands the importance of their visibility. And that's the second thing. So that's what I would say. Is it on your agenda and are you visible and is your agenda visible? Because if those two things are happening, everything can flow from there and there will be animated, excited people to help work with you. So I guess the third thing is it on your agenda? Is your agenda visible? And are you working with the people who are affected by it? Because if you're not doing that third thing, your agenda is probably not that helpful. And if it is visible, it's visibly out of touch. So you do need to be working with the people who are affected by the agenda.
Does language matter? Does it matter if you say homosexual, gay, queer, LGBTQIA+?
Oh, Lord, it's a fun one. This is going to have a variable answer. And
I had to ask. I'm sorry.
You have to ask. No, you have to ask. It's right. Because, I mean, I can jokingly say, like, I can't, I mean, we'll debate if we cut this. I mean, I can jokingly say, like, I can barely track the letters if we went the whole way out. And we would debate what Q stands for. If you set members of our LGBTQ community together in a room, we would still be debating what the Q stands for. Questioning or queer, who knows? I think it's queer. And what's the plus? And so, listen, that is such a real question, and it's important. The first thing I would say is each region of the world is going to have its own journey here. So I think it's important to figure out what is right for your local community and for your employees. For me personally, as a queer person, I find queer makes my life a heck of a lot easier because it is super inclusive of gender identities, of people's different sexualities. It's a very inclusive term. That said, it makes people who are not queer cringe to say it because it has been historically a derogatory term. So I've generally driven people towards LGBTQ+, LGBT+, something that just signals the inclusion. If you can get comfortable with queer in a lot of spaces, particularly in the United States, that can work well, but it's going to vary. So I'd say listen to people, but that language does matter. Most people actually don't want to hear homosexual. It's fairly clinical and reductive. I rarely see it actually existing in an actual term, how we all refer to ourselves. And it matters because words have historically shaped this community. Queer was reclaimed. And those words shape how people identify themselves, how they relate to others, and how they want to see themselves within the world. So figuring out how to be as inclusive as possible is really important. I think that words matter.
The words matter, but listen and respond to what people are telling you, how they identify.
Yes.
Dakota, thank you so much. And thank you for listening. We'd love to know your thoughts. To get in contact, leave us a message at thesowhat@bcg.com. And if you like this podcast, why not hit subscribe and leave a rating wherever you found us? It helps other people find us too.